Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is what we're going to be talking about on Direct Impact.
Listen, I want you to do this with me. Let's do this together. Would you be my running mate, and let's get this thing on the road?
Staging a phone call? Not a good look for a woman who wants to be the president of the United States. We're going to show it to you. This is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. All right, so let's start with the economy. There is a new crisis. This is a world crisis that's brewing, and it has everything to do with the U.S. debt. I don't know if you've heard, but it's reached, are you ready for this number? Because it's an outstanding number, $34 trillion. $34 trillion, that's the U.S. debt. Look at what just happened, by the way, in the Japanese stock market.
Some developing news this morning, and all eyes will be on Wall Street this morning. Here's the deal. Japan's stock market is taking a hard fall right now, experiencing its worst day slump in nearly 40 years, dropping by nearly 12%.
So let me tell you about how we got to this point, all right? The U.S. debt has been compounding due to the fact that we spend way more than we take in. Simple, right? So how do we make up the difference? We borrow money by giving people essentially bonds. And that is why there is a real concern that this U.S. debt bubble is about to burst. And when it does, it's going to have a huge global implication. Why? Because if we can't pay down our debt, the countries who've lent us this money by buying these bonds will also go under. And we're talking about a lot of money and a lot of countries. Most of the money, by the way, and this is interesting, most of the money comes from our top allies around the world. So now think in terms of, you know, the position of the different countries in the world. Who are these top allies, right? I mean, think about this. Our borrowing here in the United States now stands at 130% of our GDP. Imagine if you ran your household budget that way. Within 20 years, it's expected to be 250%. Of our GDP. Imagine owing 250% of what you have. You'd be broke or going broke. Now, why is that global threat, right? What's the rest of the world have to do with the U.S. not being able to perhaps pay its bills or being in debt? Well, who do you think we owe most of that money to that we may at some point here, maybe even soon, not be able to pay back? Our allies, who have bought $7.6 trillion of our debt. $7.6 trillion of our debt. Let me show you what we're talking about here. The one we owe the most to. Oh, what a coincidence. Japan, $1 trillion. Now you know why their stock market is crashing in part. The UK, they own $716 billion of our debt. Luxembourg accounts for $371 billion. Canada, who catches our cold when we sneeze, they own $321 billion of our debt. See, they all thought the U.S. was a good investment, but now they're having second thoughts. And they're all crucial allies, by the way. Look at Japan. Japan is the U.S. proxy in Asia. The U.K., Canada, that's NATO, right? So get me back on camera if you can, Vic. How did the U.S. get into this predicament, right? Short answer, defense spending for endless wars that we did not win, which we may now have to rethink. I pulled together the, I looked for this and found it for you because I wanted to share this with you. I pulled the 2023 numbers are out, the defense numbers, right? Let me show them to you. Last year, the U.S. spent $916 billion on national defense. That's almost $1 trillion on defense. That is more than the next nine countries combined. That is about one-sixth of the federal budget, and it accounts for 40% of all global military spending. And where did we spend it? We spent it in Iraq. We spent it in Afghanistan alone. Just those two places accounts for $8 trillion. Got almost nothing in return except, well, hate, chaos, and repudiation, maybe. And then we spent another $2 trillion on the fake war on terror against a faceless enemy, right? The interest alone that we're going to be paying as a result of that, which I just shared with you, by just paying down the debt on that alone, it's going to be about $6.5 trillion in 2050. $6.5 trillion in interest payments. If you're a U.S. taxpayer, which I am, by the way, this is my pocket that they're reaching into right here. I mean, that's coming out of us, and it's just not sustainable. It truly is about to blow. You know, Manila, all I can say as I think through this situation that you and I have been talking about for a couple days is about this, the next time that either Trump or Biden or Harris or President X, whoever the hell it's going to be in the future, says to us as, you know, American citizens and taxpayers, we need another $100 billion for, I don't know, Ukraine, South China Sea, Israel, whatever. I mean, maybe it's time we start saying, wait a minute, we can't afford it, right?
Yeah, Rick, I don't think we've had any president in the United States in the better part of the last half of the 20th century and now in the 21st century that has been able to say anything like that. We've been on a runaway spending spree ever since the 90s, you know, the heyday, the good old 90s, right? But I think what's part of what's triggering this massive meltdown around the world and people are freaking out, especially our financiers over in Japan, is that just last week, there's something called the Somm rule.
Yeah, I saw that.
Claudia Somm is an Obama-era economist who only in 2019 figured out that there was this pattern that goes back to the 1950s and 60s and has been true ever since. It doesn't necessarily mean it's guaranteed to be true, but she states this. She says it says that the initial phase of a recession starts when the three-month moving average of U.S. unemployment rate is at least half a percentage point higher than the 12-month low. So this is kind of this rolling movement. And we've triggered that as of last week after the jobs reports. So as we enter into, you know, the final less than 100 days now ahead of this election, it boils down to the bread and butter kitchen table conversations, Rick. And people, all they see, they don't care about what's happening in the Nikkei. They don't really care about what's happening in the Dow. What they care about is that literally their eggs are costing a gazillion dollars. Their gas is costing them a gazillion dollars.
Yeah.
Heating and cooling costing them a gazillion dollars. Where is all their tax money going? There's no relief. That's what they care about. But then when you look at recession on top of it, oh boy, that's going to be a huge problem come November.
Well, yeah, and a lot of the other countries who are not our allies, who don't owe us this money, with the possible exception of maybe China, are kind of licking their lips and going, okay, yeah. I'm talking about the BRICS countries, for example, who are saying, you guys are getting yourself into one hell of a hole. We told you not to do this, but you keep doing it. So let's see what happens after that. Let's go to the next place that you should fear that your taxpayer dollars may be going to next, right? You're going to say, well, where the hell is that, right? But I'm going to tell you in a minute why I'm saying that. But first, here's the situation. We're talking about Bangladesh. The country's leader, Sheikh Hasina, steps down amid rioting. That's now only increased, still happening. We're watching it. The country's rudderless right now. Often our State Department sees a situation like that as an opportunity to strike and take over, I fear. So look at this. I mean, this has just been ongoing there. 300 people have so far been killed in the rioting, has Muslims attacking Hindus, and then some Hindus attacking back. India, which is next door, is concerned enough to recall its citizens, stop all flights to and from the country. India is a majority Hindu nation. Bangladesh is a majority Muslim nation. Why am I concerned that our government is going to get involved in this situation? Well, let me show you somebody. Go ahead and put him up, Vic. Look at this guy right here. His name is Mohammed Yunus. Have we got him? Wait till you see Mohammed Yunus. He has all the characteristics of a State Department plant in the form of a Juan Guaido, who we installed in Venezuela, Petro Poroshenko, for example, who we installed in Ukraine. This guy is U.S. educated, U.S. connected to both the State Department, even the White House, taught at university as a professor in Tennessee. Look, aside from the future leader with ties to Washington, what else is the recipe for a coup in places like Venezuela and Ukraine? Why, of course, an uprising, civil unrest. Here's Eunice talking about that.
Great job. You got to the street and raised your voice. Children were killed. You still continued. Young people came forward against the police, against the paramilitary, against the army, who was shooting them and killing them every day. Even yesterday, there was a killing of some 97 people were killed yesterday. It goes on before she finally decided to step down, because that's what the whole country was waiting for, demanding that she must quit, she must leave the country, leave us alone, because she has tortured us, she has made this country unlivable for people, and all the corruption she has done, and all the terrible things she has done to people, denying the rights of people, denying the right to vote. We didn't have any election for the last three terms, like 15 years that she has voted. And these young people, these are two-thirds of the total population of 170 million people. So the young people are two-thirds of the population. Never voted any single election yet.
Has a Hamid Karzai look to him, doesn't he? What do you think of this, Manila? I mean, look, I'm not saying anything. I don't think anything has happened related to the State Department yet. It just, I'm so used to seeing this recipe. You know what I mean?
Well, Rick, I'm going to quote you from earlier this week. You said, when it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck.
It's a duck.
It's probably a duck, but we don't know, right? I mean, this is, I think, the first that many people are learning about this man who was born in Bangladesh and spent much of his younger formative years here in the United States. If Mr. Yunus, or maybe we call him Dr. Yunus, if we looked at his resume in a vacuum, it sounds quite impressive. He received a Fulbright scholarship to study economics at Vanderbilt. He got his PhD there. Sounds like a really smart guy. He kind of, in many ways, you could look at him as sort of the Bengali Bernie Sanders, right? You have some 80-something-year-old man that, for whatever reason, seems to just, the youth voters or would-be voters are excited about this old guy that's all tied into the West, specifically the United States. But if you zoom out and you look at this from a geopolitical perspective,
right,
and put that lens on,
right,
you got to look at the U.S. and going, well, this is interesting for the United States, because then this helps them kind of counter both India and China in that region of the world where the U.S. has been losing a lot of grip in that area. So this gives them a great opportunity if you look at it that way.
Of course.
But, you know, who he really is, we don't know. We do know that he is this Nobel Prize guy for giving out these micro loans that are tied to the IMF and tied to other,
which,
I don't know, sounds kind of loan sharky to me.
Which has also come into question. Okay, finally, I want to tell you about interesting how people we know or think we know and maybe don't. Now to the presidential election in the U.S. Lately, as you know, I've been very critical of former President Trump and his campaign, really. He seems to be taking the bait way too often and is doing and saying things that he probably is not helping himself by saying. Well, not to be outdone, his opponent now seems to be saying, I can top that. In this video that I'm about to show you that was released yesterday when she picked her vice president, Kamala Harris comes across horribly bad and even fake, dare I say, when she's asked to stage the moment. When she calls her running mate and offers him the job. Watch.
Listen. I want you to do this with me. Let's do this together. Would you be my running mate and let's get this thing on the road?
I would be honored, Madam Vice President.
The joy that you're bringing back to the country, the enthusiasm that's out there, it would be a privilege to take this with you across the country.
We're going to do this. We're going to win. And we're going to unify our country and remind everyone that we are fighting for the future for everyone. So let's get out there and get this done, okay?
I'm sorry, but I see that. I see staged. I see fake. I see somebody coming to her and saying, I got an idea. I know you already told him he was the pick, but why don't you pretend to call him back and we'll record it? And I and most people with ethics would have said, no, we don't stage things. That would be a lie. But she kind of swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. And I'm sorry, maybe it's me. Maybe it's because I'm a journalist and I was trained and taught differently. Or maybe it was the effect my parents had on me. SBS, you don't do stuff like that. And if she's willing to lie about that, what else is she willing to lie about? I don't know, Manila. Am I going overboard here?
Well, Rick, I agree with you, and I think all those points are valid. However, let me play devil's advocate here. I have been in Washington for quite some time, and I would argue that this is just par for the course, that all the politicians do stuff like that. Everything's kind of staged. Anytime they give an interview, everything's kind of already, you know, primed for them. So this is no different. But on top of that, you add that in 2024, the world lives on TikTok and social media, and you have to get that message out in this 30-second little video. And this is what the thing we just saw with Kamala Harris and Waltz is made for that. It's made to circulate on social media. So they kind of have to do it. And the sad thing is, the young people that are on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, they know it's BS, but it still resonates with them. And this is where the Harris campaign wants to go, is grab that youth vote that Biden had lost.
Call me crazy, but I will say this. I've now been in this business for something like 30 years. Graduated from the University of Minnesota, Eric Severide School of Journalism, 1980 or something like that. I have never in my life allowed anyone to know what I was going to ask them before I sat down and interviewed them. I have never sent my questions to anyone before I did an interview. It's anathema to me. It's anathema to me. It's not what I stand for. It's not what journalists do. I don't stage. I don't fake things. And you know what? I like who I see when I look in the mirror. I don't like what I just saw in that video. So I stand behind my statement. Love you, Manila. We'll talk again tomorrow.
But Rick, this is why they're in D.C. and not Hollywood. Yeah. They're terrible actors.
Or maybe because they're not real and they're not journalists. So we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, kiddo. We're gonna take a quick break, but you know what? When we come back, I want to talk to somebody who I'm always interested in talking to about some of the same issues that we were just talking about with Manila, because he's got a very, this is what he does. He's an analyst, a geopolitical analyst. We're going to be talking to Mark Sloboda. He is standing by golly, and he and I are going to go after this in just a little bit. A lot to talk about, including Israel and Iran, which we didn't touch on. So stay right there. We're going to be right back. All right, let's get to it. My next guest is a international relations expert, security expert, political analyst. Mark Sloboda is good enough to join us now to talk about some of the things that are going on in the world. Maybe we start with the election here in the United States. I know you're not in the United States, but I'm wondering how you're viewing this thing right now. Obviously, a lot of mistakes, I think, maybe you would disagree with me, on the part of former President Trump, in that he's been taking the bait and talking about things that I don't think are helping him. And then we have this incident today with Kamala Harris essentially just, I think, staging something that is way beneath somebody who wants to hold that high office. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm eminently amused and a little bit saddened that this is what the choice that the American people are presented with to choose as their leadership for the next 4 years. Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, is that really all that the American political system, you know, the 300 plus million people, and that's what it comes down to? It's a little disappointing. And I think right now that the power vacuum that exists in the White House with the corpse of Uncle Bernie, I mean, Uncle Biden, propped up by Jake Sullivan and Anthony Blinken, is just not convincing. And a lot of countries around the world sense this power vacuum, this lamest of lame duck U.S. presidencies. And it's clear that Kamala Harris is not in charge and doesn't seem capable of taking charge for the remainder of Biden or Biden's handlers administration. You know, and a lot of countries are looking to take advantage of that.
You know, I got to give her this, though. She takes stage directions well. Not in that interview that I showed today. That was horrible. but generally speaking, I think she's gaining in the polls because she's listening to these producers / advisors who are telling her where to stand, where to sit, where to look, who to call on. And she's holding her own doing that. Unfortunately, none of that is real. And when she gets into the real job, it's got to be real. No one stages for you how to have a conversation with Xi or Putin or Modi or any of those guys. So, you know, you're right. It's a little troubling at this point.
I'll tell you who is a lot more likely to eat the Biden administration or what's left of it and her alive. She doesn't need to worry about Putin or Modi or Xi Jinping. She needs to worry about Benjamin Netanyahu because he's the one right now that senses the weakness and feels that he has the reins right now to just drive the U.S. here, there, wherever he wants it.
What do you think is going on there? Yeah, I've been reading a lot lately, and I know you do too, about the internal situation inside of Israel. And there's a lot of infighting there. And it does seem like the Netanyahu or the Benny Gantz faction, these hardline war guys, are winning. And they're taking the country to a place that I think will hurt both them in the end and the United States. What are your thoughts?
Well, unfortunately, I think the majority of Israeli politics in one form or another, whether they back Netanyahu personally or Gantz, or they're of a very, shall we say, right-wing, pro-war,
yes,
pro-hostility political spectrum right now. So it almost doesn't make a difference whether it's Netanyahu or Gantz or someone else. But if you take a look at it, Israel in the past roughly two weeks has attacked Yemen,
mm-hmm,
has attacked Lebanon, has attacked Syria, and now they've attacked, in an extremely embarrassing provocation, Iran, assassinating the lead diplomat who was negotiating,
yes,
supposedly pushed by the United States with Israel
to return the hostages.
Chief. Yes, yes. I mean, we're told the Biden administration said we're serious about a ceasefire. We're pushing it. And then what? Israel, the side that the U.S. backs, just assassinated the chief diplomat negotiating a ceasefire, supposedly, on the other side.
Yeah.
Does anyone take the U.S. seriously with their reaction to this?
And
Iran, I mean, Muslim culture, guest right is sacred. He was a guest, a state guest, for the inauguration of their new president, Masoud Pezeshkian, whom we're told is supposed to be a reformer who wanted to improve relations with the West. Well, there's not going to be any ceasefire in Gaza now. There's not going to be any peace with Iran. And Israel seems to be trying to just start a regional conflagration, attacking all of their neighbors. And the primary target of all of these provocations and attacks is not Iran. And it's not Hamas. It's you.
Yeah. Well,
it's the American people.
The proof,
it's the U.S. government.
But the proof
they're trying to draw the U.S. into a direct war with Iran. That has always been their aim.
Sadly.
They're this close to it.
By the way, just to put a period on your point, I mean, the Israelis and Prime Minister Netanyahu say that they insist, and he came here and said it, all we want is those hostages back. We want those hostages back. Let me just ask, if he really wanted those hostages back, why would he assassinate the guy he's negotiating with to get the hostages back? Think about that. Yeah. That's crazy. Then you don't really want the hostages back, I would imagine, right? I mean,
yeah, it's not a priority. It's definitely not a priority for him.
Do they make it?
The polls all say that as soon as the conflict is over, the Israeli people would like to see him gone. Well, he's got every political motivation to continue the conflict far into the future. He senses a complete power vacuum in the White House. The U.S. Congress just feted his genocide with 58 blood-chilling ovations.
Mm-hmm.
He feels newly empowered, and he sees a golden sunrise in the distance that is a Trump Vance presidency, Trump 2.0, that will support him even more than the Biden administration.
Yeah. Speaking of support, we're down to a minute, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are on Ukraine. I know the way things are moving there right now, it looks just like a slaughter for Russia. But there's talks of a deal, of people talking. Do you think we're close to that?
No, we're even close to that.
Really?
No one's talking seriously about it. It's all just noise. It's all background chatter.
So you don't think Zelensky's in such a weakened state that he will eventually capitulate to something, even just allowing a conversation to happen with Russians? Because up to now, he's just talked to himself.
No, I don't believe there's any possibility of peace anywhere in the near future. If he tried it, if he wanted to, and I don't believe he does, but if he tried to, he'd be killed by his own Banderite fascists and ultranationalists. And they've threatened him again in the last month that if he engages in negotiations. But I think he's internalized it all at this point, and he's absorbed everything the West has pumped him up to be. And he has no intention. He's not even capable of conceiving of an exit ramp.
Yeah, I guess it's good to be the king, even if you weren't chosen. Mark, you're always a pleasure to talk to, my friend. We're out of time. We'll see you on the next time.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show. Remember to always be looking outside your own box. Truths, they don't live in boxes, as we like to say. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you next time.